You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to turn you over to the public address by Governor Jay Inslee, give you the latest on what's happening out here. So as soon as he steps up at the podium at the bottom of the hour, we will turn you over to him. Meanwhile, joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, a man I know a lot of people are familiar with out here, a star at the University of Washington, had some great years as an offensive lineman in the league, and now he's one of us. He's part of the media. He's an analyst, and he is the great Lincoln Kennedy. Lincoln, how are you, man?
Guys, good to be with you. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. We're all at our respective homes doing the shows from home.
So, right.
You know, there's a little bit of a delay, so bear with us. We do appreciate you hanging out with us for a few minutes. But just give us your thoughts before we get into specifics with everything. Just the way free agency has gone to this point. Biggest surprise for you so far has been what, if anything?
No, there really hasn't been any big surprises. I mean, obviously, the most notable one is Brady to the Buccaneers. I would have thought the Patriots, with the relationship that he had with Robert Kraft, would have resolved itself, and he would have found a way to finish his entire career as a Patriot. But not really surprised. I mean, we've seen other superstars, have that. You know, Joe Montana, Marcus Allen, name a few, but not really a whole lot of surprises. I think, if there's anything that surprised me, the aggressiveness of the teams out there as quickly as they operated. Once the new CBA was voted on, it was imperative that the teams got started quickly. And you saw how anxious there were a number of teams out there to go out there and sign the people they had keyed in on and get that done as quickly as possible. Now, the ones who are kind of left out to dry pretty much if they weren't traded are the wide receivers, and that's mainly because it's going to be a very deep class of wide receivers.
Hey, Lincoln, so Seahawks signing four offensive linemen, and you being a former offensive lineman, and we had a nice little debate last segment, wish you could have been there for it, but about, you know, and I'm kind of an apologist for offensive line just because I think it's harder to find good guys coming out of college, and then it's also just something, you know this, you, as an offensive lineman, you don't ever get any credit. The only time you're ever noticed is if you screw up, right? And so I'm just curious how you feel about, do you think that is part of the problem, that it's tough to coach guys up coming out of college because they're in these spread systems and not in a three-point stance and all of that?
Well, there's a number of parts to answer your question. First of all, the college game, as far as offensive line play, is not conducive to that in the NFL. Offensive line play, in my opinion, a lot of times in college is just hindrance instead of blocking. What I mean by that is guys are basically getting in other guys' ways just to hinder them a little bit. They're not really learning to block them. More importantly, the technique is out of the window. So that's why it's very hard for offensive linemen a lot of times to translate effectively on the next level of the National Football League, learning how to get a three-point stance, so on and so forth. With that being said, it's also hard to develop those guys. A lot of times the way guys are getting paid, especially coming out of college now, they're being rewarded with such lavish contracts, there's really not much to work for. And then if they really try to find a way to develop themselves, it's, you know, the chips are stacked against them because lack of practice time, in my opinion, hinders the development of offensive linemen, especially when you can't practice in pads. So it's kind of a, you know, roundabout way of answering your question, but as far as guys on the next level, what pays off for more offensive linemen, and this has always been the case, is just experience and also having a good coach and being a part of a good scheme, a scheme that are definitely conducive to their athleticism. And just the longer they're together collectively as offensive line, the more effective they'll become.
Hey, Lincoln, you've blocked for some mobile quarterbacks during your career, and I remember Mark Brunell, he was pretty mobile back at Washington when you were there. But there's some difficulties, too, I would think, with Russell Wilson. The talk here is that, yeah, he's able to save you some sacks by wriggling free at times, but then maybe he also runs into some sacks, too. So what are some of the difficulties when you're an offensive lineman when the guy's not necessarily in the pocket behind you all the time?
Just not knowing where he's at. I mean, that kind of, you know, leaves you a little bit of a disarray as an offensive lineman because you don't know, you know, which side to try to drive the guy to or direct the guy to if you're not sure where the quarterback is. You know, I remember playing with Rich Gannon in Oakland, and I remember one of the things feeling that Rich would drop back in his normal set, and after basically a three Mississippi in my head, I know that he would drive the pocket and try to run somewhere between up in the cup. So I knew that more times than not, I was driving my guy wide to allow that inner hole to open up. That was the sort of an understanding that I had with Rich. When back in college, when it was with Mark Brunell, because he was such a little scatter guy, much like Russell Wilson, one of the things that I always wanted to do was just try to find a way to stay between him and the defensive lineman and read the eyes of the defensive lineman while they're trying to look for him. And then, of course, being the guy, the size that I am, you know, it's harder for guys to look around me, so they make their intentions much more clear than others.
Hey, Lincoln, one of the things the Seahawks have done that we were talking about before is they've sort of brought together, I won't say bargain basement guys, but just guys that don't have the name that a lot of other offensive linemen have, and it feels like they take flyers. Like, all right, it's not going to be a huge financial investment. Maybe the guy pans out. And even when they've spent money, it hasn't worked out, whether we're talking about Luke Jokel or Jamarcus Webb or any of these other guys. It feels like if you go up and down the list, more often than not, it hasn't worked out when they've done that. Rather than go after a proven commodity like Duane Brown, I know when Andre Whitworth was out there, that was somebody they didn't go after. Do you think it's better if you're the GM of a team, when you're talking about O-line, is it better to put that money into something you know is a proven commodity, or do you look at the other side and go, well, you know, I can get two of these guys for the same price and maybe one of them will pan out?
As a GM, I would want somebody to see the hunger in their eyes. I would want a lesser-known guy who wants to make big money, who wants to make a name for himself, and you have seen time in his play, the passion that he loves football. That's what I would want. And more times than not, you're going to get that from a lesser-known star because, let's face it, once that guy is already making $3-4 million a year, what's the incentive for him to try to be better? And that's the problem that you have with a lot of players, not just offensive line, a lot of players. Especially back in the day, you know, guards and centers weren't being paid as amicable as they are to these days, or handsomely as much as they are these days, and they would want to work for that big contract, and you would see them geared. Now a lot of these guys are getting those big contracts, and then the other guys around them have to find a way to work. So I would try to find an offensive lineman, I don't care what, one of the lesser knowns that seems hungry, that really wants to establish himself, and give him an opportunity on a short-term deal. 1-2 years with some incentives to say, look, if you really pay off the way we think you can, you'll have a bigger splash and a bigger contract, and you have the ability, if you don't like it here, to test free agency.
Well, that's a great point, Lincoln. And, you know, that's what they always say about blocking, that it's about want to more than anything else. So, hey, let me ask you about Jadeveon Clowney, because, you know, I just watching him as a player, and, you know, I was just watching a replay of a Pittsburgh game where he didn't have, you know, great stats, but I see how he affects plays, you know, knocking down passes, pushing the pocket. From an offensive lineman standpoint, how difficult is a guy like that to block? And you know, I guess the second part of that question would be, are you surprised that he hasn't gone for sort of the top-tier free agency money?
Well, first of all, when you're blocking against someone that athletic, it really it's what I require, what I call, like, you have to bring a lunch to that type of game, because they're going to make you work the entire game. And of course, that's definitely what I, as an offensive lineman, I look forward to, because I've always felt that if you want to be the best, you got to find a way to consistently beat the best. And so that's why you want that type of top-tier talent playing against you as much as possible. But, you know, as far as where Jadeveon Clowney is a free agency, my biggest question is this, is that we've seen him, especially when he got traded from Houston to Seattle, we saw flashes of greatness. And now my question becomes, why can't we see that throughout his whole career? Why are we just seeing it now when it comes to contract year? And that's what I would focus in on the general manager. I'm not surprised that he hasn't been signed for big money, because honestly, I think a lot of general managers and a lot of coaches feel the exact same thing. They want to see more of a consistent basis, not just when he wants to turn it on. He can be great when he turns it on, but they want him to turn it on all the time. And they don't want to commit big dollars to someone like that with a lot of guaranteed money if he's just going to, you know, play second fiddle when he was the first draft choice overall, like he did so many years in Houston.
Well, Lincoln, if you're his agent, at this point, what kind of advice would you give him?
I'd give them let's look in lesser and being stronger. I would tell them let's look into a 1 or 2 year deal from a team that's going to give a fully guaranteed contract for that deal, and then we can revisit it after some time. Because you know, when in this game and age, when you can play the run just as effectively as you can play the pass, they just want to see consistency and they want to see a dominance. And everybody wants that dominant in Russia, because that is a perimeter go-to when you're talking to general managers. You got to have at least one on your roster. There will be a market for him if he can show that he has that overall consistency and that ability to stay consistent.
Lincoln Kennedy is our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Let's talk about a team that was out in your neck of the woods. You guys are going to Vegas now with the Raiders, but the Los Angeles Rams are a team that we've been watching obviously closely. They were a Super Bowl contender. They were in the game, and now you look at them, and it felt like you could kind of see what was coming with the way they were, you know, trading away draft picks and investing big money in certain guys, and it's sort of come to roost now. They get rid of Todd Gurley after committing big dollars to him. A lot of the defensive acquisitions, whether it's Ndamukong Suh or Aqib Talib, are no longer there. It feels like they're headed for a big downturn. When you look at that team, do you see something similar, or do you think there's a reason to be hopeful if you're a Rams fan?
Guys, the Super Bowl hangover is real to me, and it always has been. The fact is that once you put all your eggs into a basket and sort of surprise someone and make a run, if you don't get that championship ring, you're really going to have to regroup and sort of find yourself again. I say the same thing for the Rams. You know, they had that rookie contract off of Jared Goff where they thought that they struck gold, and then they were able to make the run and get well acclimated, get well known, and win some football games and make long runs into the playoffs, and then they had to commit that ultimate money to Jared Goff. And when you do that as a quarterback, well, now you're going to put yourself behind the eight ball for a little bit. Same thing as you mentioned about Todd Gurley, committing those resources to one or two players in this day and age kind of puts you behind, because you're asking a lot of your main core guys to stand up to be counted and to be notable. And for Todd Gurley, that knee was bothering him, so the injury started to catch up with him. It is what it is. It's part of the game. But as far as the Rams, they have to reload right now, and they have to reload in a way where they're not spending as much money. That Aaron Donald contract, that Jared Goff contract, you talked about the Todd Gurley contract, you know, spending it high on those three core players, that really is going to count against them. It's really going to make them have to retool and regroup.
Hey, Lincoln, so being on the radio doing color analysis for the Raiders, Bob mentioned, you know, heading off to Las Vegas. How's that whole thing going? I mean, it's got to be difficult for, you know, the fans. And, you know, I grew up a Raider fan living in Northern California. And what about, tell us about that move and that transition. And has it been difficult? I'm sure it has emotionally, leaving a lot of fans back in Oakland, but you know, there's obviously a lot of excitement moving on to Las Vegas as well.
Well, now that the fact of the relocation has been in a couple of years in the making, it's kind of died down. But the fact is that the Raider Nation has always been well traveled. I mean, I've been with the team, and we went to London several times and had a big turnout in London and Mexico and stuff like that. So wherever the Raiders play, even on the road back here in the United States, wherever the Raiders play, there's going to be a large turnout. I think a lot of the Raider Nation could take solace in the fact that they're going to have a new stadium, something that's going to be appealing, and more importantly, they're going to be a big draw. So that home field advantage that once they had in Oakland, not necessarily going to be there in the same direction. It's a new day. It's a new age. It's a new time of fan. You know, I've told people all along that I believe that today is not necessarily made for the common fan. They want the common fan to stay at home. They want the corporate fan who's going to rent out suites and who's going to, you know, bring 20, 30 people to a game and try to entertain them. And that's right in line with what Vegas does. It's an entertainment capital of the world. So imagine yourself there having fun, partying for a weekend, and at the end of that Sunday weekend, you can go see a professional football game, something they've never had in a brand new, spanking, nice looking stadium. It's really going to be a time of their life.
Well, with the Raiders getting Marcus Mariota, and I saw the contract, 2 years, $17.6 million, but with incentives, it could be worth as much as $47 million, according to a guy on the NFL Network. And so if you're there in Las Vegas, who's going to take the first snap for the Raiders next year? Will it be Derek Carr or Marcus Mariota?
Well, it'll be Derek Carr. The reason why this move is solid, in my opinion, is twofold. One, it gives John Gruden that mobile quarterback that he's wanted. Derek Carr is mobile, but he chooses not to use his mobility. So Marcus Mariota gives John Gruden that mobile quarterback that he wants to do a lot of the RPO stuff that you kind of see kind of prevalent around the league today. And two, it should and very well should force Derek Carr to be a better quarterback, to be better now. You can sit and say what you want about the stats, but there were a lot of times where there was a lot of disappointment in covering the games that we thought that Derek Carr should have and could have done more as a quarterback. And now that because he's got a capable starter behind him, he's never really had that pressure or felt threatened like that. Now I think he'll play a lot better.
Hey, why is it that it seems like, and maybe it's just the media running with, you know, hey, John Gruden thinks this or Mike Mayock thinks this, but the impression was that they weren't happy with Carr. And I didn't watch every game, so you could speak to it obviously much better, but I look at his numbers and go, man, the guy completed 70% of his passes. He had single-digit interceptions. I don't quite get the dissatisfaction with a guy who was in the MVP conversation a couple of years ago. People talking about Brady coming there. It just seemed like they wanted anybody but Carr. Is that overblown, or do you think there is a level of dissatisfaction with him there?
The question that you have to ask yourself as a general manager, a head coach, and that's what John Gruden is basically for the Raiders, you have to ask yourself, is this a guy who's going to get us over the top and get us to a Super Bowl? Because that's what you want. So if that's not present, then it's not going to happen. Yeah, you talk about statistics, the way they go, yes, you know, had a high completion rate, but look at the completions. He was throwing the checkdown routes. There were times that Derek Carr wasn't even looking downfield. He was just eager to get rid of the ball because he's been hit before and he didn't want to get hit again. Rightfully so. Look, the guy's had some severe injuries, so I don't fault him for feeling that way. However, when it plays to that way as a quarterback, when you start looking at as a quarterback, you're missing a lot of stuff down the field. Most notably, he didn't have the weapons. Let's give it, call it what it is. When he developed a relationship with Darren Waller, he developed a tendency that teams began to pick up on, and he threw some interceptions trying to focus on Darren Waller. Same thing could be said about Hunter Renfro. When he finally developed a relationship with Hunter, and then he started going to him more often, there were a lot of interceptions that happened. So the tendencies were driving Gruden wild because he would not break those tendencies, whether it was a check down or throwing to one of the two receivers I just mentioned.
All right, Lincoln, unfortunately for you, your first 3 years in the league matched up with my last three. So that means we're both really old, especially me. But I want to ask you, because every time I've run into you, you're just the sweetest, nicest guy in the world. But you had to have had some kind of a switch that you flipped when you got on the field, right?
Absolutely. Whenever I put on the helmet, I all I saw was red.
Yeah. Do you find that later on in life, you know, when you talking to your buddies and stuff, there's a lot more camaraderie? I always think, like, I wasn't a total jerk when I played, but I felt like I kind of had to be, you know, and there's a word that I can't use on the air. But, you know, for you, did you feel that same way? Like, once you get out of the NFL, you feel like you don't really have to be that way anymore. And I feel like I've enjoyed a lot of the relationships that I had with former teammates and even opponents.
In my experience, especially when I played, when I lost my temper, bad things happened. And there were a lot of times where I lost my temper on the football field purposely to get all my aggressions and frustrations out. These days, I have to find other venues to do. That's why I smoke a lot of cigars and I try to listen to a lot of jazz and stay relaxed. I don't let things affect me quite as they did when I was young. But these days, as far as camaraderie, one thing that I appreciate is talking about that memory and just feeling overall, as a commentator, a person who covers a game, from what I see, I want to see the same type of passion that we had back in the day for the game. And overall, I don't always see it, because when I talk to a number of these guys here that are playing the game these days, their thoughts and their desires are always off the field and elsewhere. Well, I'm just going to play through my first contract, test free agency, and then I'm going to make a rap album, or I'm going to go to Hollywood and make videos, or whatever it is. And there aren't many guys that you come across this day and age that, like, play like we used to say, I want to play till I can't play anymore. I want to roll till the wheels fall off. So with that being said, I'm looking for, hoping that through our medium that we have with the media, being able to sort of derive the next generation of that passionate player that just wants to be there and wants to play football to the best of his abilities for as long as he possibly can.
Hey, Lincoln, I got a couple of offbeat questions for you here. We've got one on the text line from the 360 here. Lincoln Kennedy, best one-handed golfer anyone has ever seen. Is that true?
Well, I know that's not true. What I do with one hand on golf is not even close to playing, but thank you very much.
Well, do you just play with one arm, though?
I can't hit the ball to save my life, guys. Matter of fact, I've given up on golf so much, but I did try to hit the ball one arm because I used to, when I used two arms, my arms are so big at times I couldn't find the ball. So I tried to figure out how to do it, and I just used one arm at times.
Okay, well, there was one former Seahawk that I remember out at McCormick Woods one time seeing him hit like 280-yard drives one-handed.
Alonzo Mitts.
So I know it's possible. Alonzo Mitts, that's right. He was really good doing it. Really good. Now, the other offbeat question I have comes from Wikipedia, so it might not be true, but it says that you at one time had 11 sausage sandwiches at Schultz's Sausage, and you did this in an hour while drinking a large Coke.
It wasn't a large Coke, it was water, guys, but the 11 sausages in an hour was the Schultz's record back then. I don't know if it still stands, but on the app, Schultz's was one of those great restaurants that we, you know, us college kids had. And the story behind that is Supeli Malamala, my other tackle, challenged me one day. We were going there for lunch, and he said, hey, let's try this contest. And then we realized about 3-4 sausages in it, where I was basically started to get full. I told Soup, I was like, dude, what happens if we don't finish, you know, in this eating contest? He's like, we got to pay. And we didn't have the money to pay. So I was like, Soup, one of us has got to take over. And he's like, man, I'm checking out. And Soup left me. He left me. He ran out on me. So I had to finish it or I would have to pay or get in trouble.
Now, more importantly, how did you feel after that?
I hated sausages ever since.
Oh, man. I would figure with that sort of success, though, that people would try to recruit you to other eating competitions after that.
No. I could never do that. I mean, I tried it at times. Even when I did a pancake contest as a kid, I hated pancakes ever since. So, yeah.
Man. Well, hey, Lincoln, it's really good to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for taking time with us. And hopefully we're getting a chance to talk about football on the field very soon. Thanks again.
I certainly hope so. To you and all your listeners, stay safe.
There you go. There's the great Lincoln Kennedy, obviously a star at the University of Washington. Nice career in the NFL and now part of the Las Vegas Raiders broadcast. You're right, Dave. That's going to take a while to get used to saying that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
He sort of answered the question about Carr. I mean, we're not here watching Raider games and seeing what he looks like and everything else. But, you know, just talking about his numbers are inflated with checkdowns and things like that. Just sort of speaking to the lack of faith that the coaching staff and the GM seem to have in him.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, the other thing I really liked what he said, and it's not just to bolster what the Seahawks are doing, but, you know, he did make a point that we don't really talk about or think about too much, and that's the fact that, you know, you get the guy, you know, Jim, you remember this. Remember Kevin Calabro used to talk about PhDs. They're poor, hungry, and driven, and that's the kind of player that you want. And he talked about, you know, yep, signing some of these guys that, you know, and especially at O-line, man, like I said, it's about want-to. It's about really wanting to block. It's not that much fun. It's not glorious, but you have to really want to do it. And getting some of these guys that are hungry, you know, I guess that's the argument to not going after, you know, the frontline guys. And, you know, I'm not sure if that works 100% of the time, but I thought it was an interesting thing to consider.
Yeah, I always appreciate that when you bring that up, Dave, and I think the Seahawks are looking more and more for that type of player because, boy, if you're just in it for the money, you're not going to last long term. And I know how you always used to say and your agent would get mad that you play for nothing. And but, boy, that's what you want to see in a player because those guys, more often than not, are going to have the grit and determination you're looking for.
All right, coming up, Governor Jay Inslee is going to make a public address. We'll be taking that live, so that'll be coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Governor Jay Inslee is up at the podium addressing everybody right now. Let's get the very latest.
Doctor's offices and other essential businesses will remain open.
Good evening, my fellow Washingtonians. I'd like to speak to you directly tonight about the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a pandemic that threatens to overwhelm our society without decisive action. We've now confirmed that more than 2,000 Washingtonians have contracted the virus. and there are likely thousands more that have not yet been diagnosed. COVID-19 has taken more than 100 lives in our state, and that's a number that will continue to rise, unfortunately. We know our hearts ache for all of the Washingtonians and their families affected by this virus. And as we move forward, we cannot forget the losses that those families have suffered.
This is a human tragedy on a scale we cannot yet project. So it's time to hunker down in order to win this fight. So tonight, I am issuing a stay-home order to fight this virus. This is Washington's stay-home, stay-healthy order. This includes a ban on all gatherings and closures of many businesses, unless those businesses are essential to the healthy functioning of our community or are able to let employees work remotely from home. It is still safe to go outside using social distancing of 6 feet, but really only for essential purposes. The grocery stores, doctor's offices, and other essential businesses will remain open. This also does not prohibit people from merely going outside to enjoy a walk on a sunny spring day. So life will go on. But for all of us in every part of Washington, it has to do so with this in mind. Stay home. Stay healthy. The less time you spend out in public, the more lives we can save, the more time we can buy to fight the waves of this virus coming down on us now and in the immediate future. I'd like to talk with you about this order and what it means for you and your loved ones and our communities. This order builds on other unprecedented steps we have had to take to protect Washingtonians already, including the closure of schools, restaurants, entertainment venues, and other businesses where people congregate. We've been thoughtful and deliberate in making these very tough choices. And I've been very clear on the need for Washingtonians to stay home already. But I have heard from health professionals, local officials, and others that people still aren't practicing these precautions. And that is one of the reasons why we have to take these steps. These measures are more stringent, and our goal is the same, to reduce social interactions, physical interactions, where this highly contagious virus can spread. This weapon, distancing ourselves, is the only weapon against this virus. And we have proven that it can work, but only if we actually use it. And here's what this order will do. Effective for a minimum of 2 weeks, it essentially requires every Washingtonian to minimize physical contact with others unless they're pursuing some essential activities, like grocery shopping, going to a doctor's appointment, or the pharmacy, or if they work at a business deemed essential to the continued functioning during an emergency. So this does not mean you can't go outside. If you feel like going for a walk, gardening, going for a bike ride, we consider these things essential activity, too, for everyone's physical and mental health. We all just need to practice social distancing of at least 6 feet to protect ourselves and others everywhere, all the time. This order will immediately ban all gatherings of people for social, spiritual, and recreational purposes. This includes events that affect the old and the young in our state. If you want to have parties on the beach or play pickup basketball at the park or have sleepovers, these are no longer allowed for at least a couple weeks. This also applies to some of the most important gatherings in people's lives, like weddings and funerals. For the sake of all, even these occasions have to be postponed. So 48 hours from now, this order will close many businesses in our state, excluding those deemed essential in these times, or businesses where employees can work remotely without coming into contact with others, physical contact, that is. If a non-essential workplace can close now, it should.
Some businesses are essential and are not being closed by this order. We've chosen these essential businesses based largely on federal guidelines. Essential businesses and personnel not limited by this order include those that help us fight this outbreak, including emergency services, healthcare industries, critical manufacturing, childcare providers, food and agriculture, transportation, financial services, defense industries, and critical local government operations, including courts. And the media will continue to operate as well. The media have just been absolutely critical to keep all of us informed about this virus. Now, of course, we care about all employees. So any essential business or entity allowed to operate under this order must implement rules that help facilitate social distancing of at least 6 feet. And I should also say to our many struggling restaurants, this order does not stop you from providing to-go and delivery service, as many restaurants are currently doing. Many of Washington's sovereign tribal governments around our state have already implemented similar measures and other important steps. They've been exceptional partners in this effort. Now, we expect everyone in our state to comply with these orders voluntarily. For a simple fact, it's because everyone knows that all of our loved ones are at risk here. But make no mistake, this order is enforceable by law and can be enforced. And we know that to be socially irresponsible in these times is to risk the lives of our loved ones. The rapid growth in the number of cases has put our state really in a race against time. We need to grow hospital capacity or else face an even greater public health emergency. And the more of us who stay home, the fewer of us who will be infected by COVID-19, and the more lives that will be saved. Now, this is a very difficult choice. And I make this difficult choice knowing it will add to the economic and family hardship many in our state are already feeling as we try to slow and turn back this pandemic. But we need to think about it in these terms. We want to get back to normal as soon as possible. We do not want this lingering intrusion in our lives. And the fastest way to get back to normal is to hit this hard. And that's what we're doing. Why? Because Washingtonians want to get back to business as soon as possible. So to address this, last week I told you about steps we're taking to relieve economic impacts of affected Washingtonians. We continue the search for ways to mitigate the economic impacts of this pandemic on the lives of our 7 million residents. You can learn more about what state assistance is available by visiting coronavirus.wa.gov. And I cannot emphasize the following point strongly enough. For the sake of our neighbors, our health care workers, our seniors and others, no one should make a run on the grocery stores to overstock. Maintain each of us maintain shopping habits, there's really not going to be any empty shelves. We feel good about this. So in these uncertain times, I'd encourage everyone to turn to whatever in their lives can bring them hope. What gives me hope are the stories of resilience and of action by individual Washingtonians to aid and comfort each other as we weather this crisis. I've heard stories like the school districts in Tacoma and Puyallup that are launching childcare services for our first responders and medical workers, professionals on the medical front who are working under enormous pressure on the front lines of this war against this virus. You know, these are the folks in some way are risking their lives for us. These are the current day heroes. And we know that those healthcare workers are going to work so we can stay home and be safe. Our childcare workers are a crucial support system in this struggle. And so they're going to work as well.
They go to work at great risk to their health, so we can stay at home. I'm also inspired by the story of a furniture factory in Mukilteo. It's now using its facilities to produce surgical masks and face shields for Providence healthcare workers to address the threat of protective equipment shortages. And in Yakima, where a small restaurant owner in business, he's only been in business 3 months before he got hit with this crisis. But he's now serving free brown bag lunches that seniors can pick up daily outside her restaurant. These are the stories that can inspire all of us. And we also know this. While we minimize our physical connections, it is essential that we maximize our emotional connections. We can all help our loved ones every day electronically. And we know this, fundamentally. This challenge is temporary. Schools will reopen. Weddings will happen. Factories will start again. And you'll be able to toast the end of this at your favorite hangout as soon as possible, because we are hitting this hard. But every single Washingtonian needs to enlist themselves in this tumultuous struggle if we are to win. We need every Washingtonian to be thoughtful and calm and compassionate, knowing for certain that we can get through this together. I'm reminded of the work of one of our great poets, Walt Whitman. In Song of Myself, he wrote, "Of the courage of present times and all times, of fighting through the storm with knuckles tight and not giving back an inch, to save others consumed by the tides." We need this spirit now in our state. We need this now in our nation. Because life will be different in Washington for a while, but we will keep working until this pandemic is defeated. Until then, I make this promise to you, my fellow Washingtonians, and it's borrowed from the same great poet. Be of good cheer. We will not desert you. Stay home. Stay healthy. Thank you, and be well.
All right, there you go, Governor Jay Inslee with the statement there. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We just had the announcement from Governor Jay Inslee. We were in a break when he stepped up to the podium, so we missed the first minute or so of that. We want to play that for everybody right now, so everybody is up to speed with what the governor had to say.
Good evening, my fellow Washingtonians. I'd like to speak to you directly tonight about the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a pandemic that threatens to overwhelm our society without decisive action. We've now confirmed that more than 2,000 Washingtonians have contracted the virus, and there are likely thousands more that have not yet been diagnosed. COVID-19 has taken more than 100 lives in our state, and that's a number that will continue to rise, unfortunately. We know our hearts ache for all of the Washingtonians and their families affected by this virus. And as we move forward, we cannot forget the losses that those families have suffered.
This is a human tragedy on a scale we cannot yet project. So it's time to hunker down in order to win this fight. So tonight, I am issuing a stay-home order to fight this virus. This is Washington's stay-home, stay-healthy order. This includes a ban on all gatherings and closures of many businesses, unless those businesses are essential to the healthy functioning of our community or are able to let employees work remotely from home. It is still safe to go outside using social distancing of 6 feet, but really only for essential purposes. The grocery stores,
doctor's offices and other essential businesses will remain open. This also does not prohibit people from merely going outside to enjoy a walk on a sunny spring day. So life will go on. But for all of us in every part of Washington, it has to do so with this in mind. Stay home. Stay healthy. The less time you spend out in public, the more lives we can save.
So there you go. There's the first part that we missed from the governor. So I guess really the stay-at-home order means just make sure you're following the order, staying put unless you need to be out. And some businesses will remain open: healthcare, critical manufacturing, childcare, food services, transportation, defense agencies, courts, and media. And again, for the very latest news on this and to stay informed on how the coronavirus or the stay-at-home order affects you, just go to 97.3 Cairo FM. Our sister station will have the latest on this throughout the day, throughout the night, and we may bring somebody over from that side of the building just for a few minutes to clarify for everybody. But feels like, guys, it's kind of what we've already been doing up to this point.
Yeah, it's not been much of a change for us. You know, I guess the one thing I think about is going to, you know, the grocery store, which is really all we need to do right now. I mean, look, this is fortunately a time in our lives where we're equipped more than ever to stay at home and to be able to work from home. So, and I feel blessed, and I know you guys do too. And I know that there's, just because we're able to continue to do our jobs, there's lots of people out there who, you know, small businesses that, you know, people that are, you know, working jobs that, you know, you got to show up to do your job and get paid. So it's we're fortunate in that way. So feel blessed in that way. But definitely, you know, I think when this whole thing's over, you know, hopefully we'll be proud of ourselves. I said that to a texter, by the way. Just hope we all come out of this proud of ourselves. Like, no panicking, no hoarding, and also no finger pointing or judging. You know, so I feel like that those are some of the bad things that can happen during this time, as, you know, as bad as the illness itself is. And then, you know, hopefully in the end, you how you come out of this, I think, is going to be what is really important. So anyway, my heart goes out to a lot of the people that aren't as fortunate as we are, and that we can do our job from our homes.
Well, agree with you there. And boy, just some powerful words by Governor Inslee talking about a race against time. The more of us who stay home, more lives will be saved. And the fastest way to get back to normal is to hit this hard. And it sounded like it's 2 weeks, and maybe it'll be indefinitely, but you're trying to flatten that curve. And this is the best thing that we can do. And I mentioned, you know, I was torn over the weekend about going golfing. I feel bad about it now. The courses were still open, but boy, I'm gonna take. I mean, they're not doing this to inconvenience us, all of us. They're doing it because it's necessary, and I'm gonna follow every letter of the law at this point, and hopefully we can get back to what we used to know as normal. And I think in the end we're gonna probably gain a greater appreciation for some of the things that we used to take for granted.
Yeah, I think without question, Jim, that's very well put by both you guys, and we are in a really fortunate position right now. We're still able to function. We're all in our individual homes and trying to do our best to give people a diversion, but we do want to bring you up to speed on what is happening out there and how it impacts you. As I said, we may bring somebody over from our sister station for a couple of moments just to expand on this a little bit. We'll also get back to the diversion of sports and some good news for a lot of Seahawks fans out there. It looks like KJ Wright will be with the Seahawks in this upcoming season. We'll explain why that is. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.